The first meeting of the UNLV Ad Hoc Presidential Search Committee will come to order. Winter, can you call the roll, please?
Chair Lieberman?
Present.
Regent Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Hayes?
Here.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Perkins?
Here.
Regent Trachok? You have a quorum present, institutional advisory members. Dr. Ahmad?
Here.
Mr. Boyer? Mr. Burns?
Here.
Dr. Filler?
Here.
Mr. Garcia?
Here.
Dr. Gray?
Here.
Dr. Cools? Dr. LaForge?
Here.
Dr. McDonough?
Here.
Ms. Molina?
Present.
Ms. Pantanod?
Present.
Dr. Porter? Ms. Sposito?
Here.
Mr. Wiley? Dr. Alamo?
Here.
Ms. Bennett? Senator Canizaro? Mr. Evans? Mr. Guzman?
Here.
Dr. Harder?
Here.
Mr. Hahn? Mr. Hendrick?
Here.
Dr. Langston? Mr. McKinley?
Here.
Commissioner Naft?
Here.
Mr. Peterson?
Here.
Ms. Seawald?
Here.
Mr. Venuya? Mr. Yakira?
Here.
Thank you.
We also have on the phone Chair Geddes and present with us Vice Chairman Regent DeBrava. We have Regent Moran and Regent McMichael. They are fully able to participate in the discussion. They are not voting members of this subcommittee of the board. We will now move into public comment. Chief of Staff Gould.
Thank you. Public comment will be taking during this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on an agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes per person. Persons making comment will be asked to begin by stating their name for the record and to spell their last name. The committee chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when that agenda item is being considered. In accordance with Attorney General Opinion Number 00-047, as restated in the Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual, the chair may prohibit comment if the content of that comment is a topic that is not relevant to or within the authority of the Board of Regents or this committee, or if the content is willfully disruptive of the meeting by being irrelevant, repetitious, slanderous, offensive, inflammatory, irrational, or amounting to personal attacks or interfering with the rights of other speakers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before we begin, public comment is a vital part of this process today and moving forward whenever appropriate. So if you are on the fence about whether you want to give public comment, now is the time to do it, and we welcome it. Please state your name when you approach the microphone. Do we have any public comment at all in the room? Thank you very much. We will go into introductions of the advisory board, and we will start next to Regent Hayes, I believe. Oh, I'm sorry, Regent McAdoo. Next to Regent McAdoo and go around.
I am Michael Ballou with Wheelis Search and Consultants.
And Scott Watson with SAM.
Can I interrupt 1 second before you keep going? It's really important so that we get a record of this, which we're required to do for open meeting law. When you speak, if you could turn on your mic, and then when you're done, just turn it off so we don't get feedback, please. Thank you.
Sajjad Ahmad, I'm Department Chair in Civil Engineering.
Very good, thank you. Dr. Tony Alamo, Senior Medical Director, Optum Healthcare, and Chairman of the Nevada Gaming Commission.
I'm Phil Burns. I'm the Executive Director for Student Conduct and the Rebel Support Team, and I'm representing the administrative faculty.
Nicole, you're on.
Sounds like I'm just in time. I apologize. I had to hurry over from work. But my name is Nicole Cannizzaro. I currently serve as the Senate Majority Leader, and I'm here as a member of the community. Thanks for having me.
I'm John Filler. I'm a professor of special education here at UNLV. I was elected by the faculty to serve on the Institutional Advisory Committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Adam Garcia. I'm the Associate Vice President and Director for Police Services for the Southern Command.
Peter Gray. I'm a professor of anthropology, and I'm representing the Graduate College.
Peter Guzman, President of the Latin Chamber of Commerce, Nevada.
Carol Harder, President Emerita of UNLV.
Good afternoon. I'm Kirk Hendrick. I'm a local attorney. I own my own sports and entertainment consulting company, and I'm a proud alum of UNLV.
I'm Deborah Cools. I'm representing Faculty Senate of UNLV, and I'm a faculty member of the UNLV School of Medicine.
Esther Langston, Professor Emeritus.
Dr. Noella Forage, I'm an Associate Professor in Residence of Psychology and the Assistant Director of the Practice, a UNLV Community Mental Health Clinic. I'm here representing the Faculty Senate.
Good afternoon. I'm Ann McDonough, Founding Dean of the Academic Success Center, and I'm representing administrators at UNLV. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Greg McKinley, CEO of Craig & Pike, and I'm Chairman of the Board of Trustees for the UNLV Foundation.
Stephanie Molina, I'm the president of the Graduate and Professional Student Association, so representing all the graduate students.
Michael Naft, Clark County Commissioner from District A.
Hannah Patnod, Undergraduate Student Body President for CSUN Student Government.
Good afternoon. I'm Jonas Peterson, the CEO of the Las Vegas Global Economic Alliance.
Tim Porter, Professor of Physics from the Department of Physics and Astronomy.
Good afternoon, Mary Beth Seawald, CEO of the Las Vegas Metro Chamber of Commerce.
Hello, I'm Michelle Sposito, Director of the Equal Employment and Title IX Office at UNLV, and I'm here as an ex officio member.
I'm Michael Yakira, a member of the Board of Trustees of the Foundation. I was a former chairman of the Foundation and also former CEO and president of NV Energy, and I'm here as a community member. Thank you.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. John Moran III, member, manager, law group of Moran and Moran, also a member of the Board of Regents.
Welcome. This is Donald McMichael, and I am board member of the Regents.
Mark DeBrava, vice chair, Board of Regents.
Tom Riley, Chancellor, Nevada System of Higher Education.
Sam Lieberman, UNLV alumni and chair of the search committee. Member of the Board of Regents.
Dean Gould, I'm chief of staff and special counsel to the Board of Regents.
Thank you. We will go around and do that again when we are working with the search consultants and they have specific input that they would like to solicit from you at that time. I would like to start where many people end, and that is to thank you, to thank my colleagues on the board for serving on this committee, to thank our incredible office staff who has already done yeoman's work to make this meeting happen and to make the process smooth. I want to thank Hannah and the student body, Stephanie and the Graduate Student Association, Mark Wiley, Chad and the Alumni Association, the UNLV Foundation, and all of the community that have been involved with this process informally now and very, very formally moving forward. I would also like to thank the faculty and staff for being so engaged in this process now and as we move forward. We have two obligations here. One is to identify candidates and eventually a final candidate to move UNLV into its next remarkable era. But we also have a responsibility to do that in a way that is sane, that is logical, that is respectful, and that will involve all of the parties that I mentioned and that every part of this community will feel engaged and involved with the process so that they can embrace the final decision of this committee, which I hope and pray every day will be endorsed by the full Board of Regents later this spring. I have been here for 39 years. I have worked with at least 9 UNLV presidents. I have learned from and been mentored from all of them, and any of this process phases me as long as we do it together and we do it in a respectful and meaningful way. So I ask you to, at all times, respect the open meeting law, which we're all going to learn about in about 2 minutes, that you always communicate with myself as the chair, with the chief of staff, and with the search consultants whenever you have concerns that need to be addressed and that we move forward in a very meaningful way and that we do it together. I also would be not following the mandate of our wonderful office staff if I don't ask the advisory board to please take your binders with you at the end of the meeting and bring them back to the next meeting. And that's very important. Thank you very much. And I believe I will turn it over to Chief of Staff Gould regarding the open meeting law.
Thank you, Chair Lieberman. I'm going to give you a brief outline of the do's and don'ts, kind of like the Southwest flight attendants who give you the do's and don'ts. I need to do this. No, unfortunately, no. I need to do this because, and I apologize for those of you who are very well acquainted with open meeting law, because I don't know if everyone has been involved in a public body meeting. It's very important that we follow the law here. One of my roles is to interject, and I'm not shy to do that if I think something is going awry during the meeting. So kind of let me give you briefly a list and an explanation. The intent of the open meeting law is that the business of a public body is to be conducted in a properly noticed public meeting, such as this one. No deliberations or decisions of a public body should take place in private, and we go to great lengths at the Board of Regents to comply with the open meeting law. Violations of the open meeting law can result in civil and criminal penalties against the offending party and can also result in an action that is taken by this committee being voided if a violation is found, typically by the Attorney General's office. So what I'd like to start with is the fact that the open meeting law, by definition, applies to public bodies, which is defined in the statute, which is NRS 241. But The search committee, being a subcommittee of the Board of Regents, is considered a public body. Therefore, all of you and all of us are subject to its restrictions. So I would encourage you and ask that all discussions and deliberations occur in an open meeting in order to avoid a violation, and that even though Nevada is what we call in the trade a quorum state, meaning you need a quorum of the committee, in this case there's six people, so you need four to be deliberating outside of a public meeting to technically have a violation. It can happen even, and I'm going to, everything I'm saying in terms of the committee is equally applicable to the advisory members. There is such a thing in the law called a walking quorum, whereby courts have held that if, think of it as the telephone game when you were a little child and you're telling someone and then they're telling someone and they're telling someone, you can get to a quorum without having a quorum in the room. So what I always advise the regents and what I'm advising you is please refrain from deliberations outside of this room. Okay. The other part of the open meeting law that we take very seriously is we are not permitted to talk about a person or an individual, their characteristics, their personality. Really, we take a very hard line on this without having a signed waiver from the person and having that person's name appearing on an agenda. So if this is not the time to start talking about throwing names out, because I will have to jump in and stop that conversation because I don't want a violation. If you have at any point, whether it's today or through the process, if you have the names of people that you think would be good candidates, you should provide them to the search consultants at Wheelis Partners, and they will give you their contact information today. It should go that route, not only because of the open meeting law, but because of confidentiality, so that it goes through them and nobody on the committee is aware of who you're nominating. The other item I want to tell you about is we are limited under the open meeting law to the agenda. So we take great care when we draft agendas to make sure that they're complete, because that's the standard. They have to be complete and they have to be able to give the public an idea of what is going to be discussed. But the converse of that is we can't go off topic. Can't start talking about things that are outside the scope of the posted agenda. When we get to new business at the end, if there's something that somebody wants to propose, you can propose it, but we don't have a conversation about it because that would be a violation. All right. With that, the other thing, one last thing. There was an amendment to the open meeting law, I think it was in 2015, the year sort of roll after a while, whereby we now have to publish in our agenda of the second meeting where we bring back the finalists, their names have to be in that agenda by law. We also post their CVs and all of the reference material that everybody gets. That's sort of a double-edged sword because while it does promote openness and transparency, as many of you know who are in academia, it also can have a chilling effect on searches, and we get this all the time. We tell the candidates all the time from the beginning, we have a very vigorous open meeting law in this state. We cannot not disclose who you are when we get to the point that you're a finalist and your name goes on that agenda. Sometimes there are candidates who say to us, sorry, I can't handle that, and they're out from the beginning. We have other ones who will say, yes, I understand, and we reiterate it, and then 2 days before the agenda gets posted, they pull out. It's just unfortunately what happens. Fortunately, not enough people pull out that generally we have quality people to bring forward. But I raise this because I want you to understand that when we get to the end of the process, we do have to post those names, and there may have to be some fluidity, and the chancellor deals with this all the time, working with the search consultants. Okay, so that's my discussion on that. Chair Lieberman, it's up to you whether you want questions or not.
I will open it to questions in a minute. I want to add something to an otherwise stellar open meeting law tutorial, and that is that in order to be discussed in a public meeting, a person must sign a waiver. So at this meeting and at all future meetings, we cannot discuss people by name unless we have a waiver from them. so we can talk about characteristics of a former presidential administration, but we cannot talk about that individual unless that individual has previously agreed to be talked about. I want to, before we go around and ask for questions, I want to ask Chair Geddes, do you have anything you want to add on the phone?
No, Chair Lieberman. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will take questions regarding the open meeting law or the agenda so far, and then we will go into the Chancellor's report on how we got to this, where we are today. Are there any questions? Over here, go ahead. State your name. Dr. Porter?
Questions for me.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Lieberman. Good afternoon on a Friday afternoon, and thank you for your willingness to participate. We deeply appreciate the time and effort that you'll take as we embark upon the selection of the new president for UNLV. Just a couple comments on how we got here and just a little bit about the process, and then we can turn it over to our search consultants and then open it up to a discussion so everybody feels comfortable about how we're going to proceed. We operate under shared governance, which means that we take very seriously the input we receive from faculty, staff, and students. And to that end, we spent a considerable amount of time on the campus soliciting feedback, actually at two different points of time, to gauge the pulse of the UNLV community with our faculty, staff, and students, as well as our community members, our foundation board, our alumni, and other groups. And it was and I would characterize it as the overwhelming consensus of those groups to move forward on a search. That recommendation was actually taken back to the Board of Regents. The Board of Regents affirmed that, gave us direction to move forward to begin, according to our own bylaws, about assembling the committee. That's how you were actually invited. Certain members are prescribed in the bylaws, such as we defer to the faculty for them to elect their own members. Same thing with our students. We ask the student elected groups to refer their elected members. We don't choose those. The chair of the Board of Regents appoints the committee of regents that would serve on this board. And once they made the decision to move forward on the search, according to our bylaws, we went and did a request for a proposal in order to engage a national search firm. Through that process, we selected Wheelis Partners, and they're here with us today, and you'll hear from them more in detail and have an opportunity to ask them questions about their process, how they do their work, how they go out and search for candidates. I can say one thing is that one of the reasons this firm was selected is that they do not rely on passive techniques in searching. They go out there and actively recruit individuals who aren't submitting their resumes, who fit the criteria, and we'll be talking about and responding to the job description, basically, the document that they'll be using to begin their search. You'll have an opportunity to provide additional input, and that would be revised, but that would be their guiding document to go out there and search actively for individuals. And they'll talk more about their philosophy of the search. We did use the Wheelis Partners in one of our recent search with CSN in choosing our president, Dr. Federico Zaragoza. They were the search firm, and we were pleased with the results and their working relationship. So the process is after today, we would agree upon the document that they'll be using, the skill set, the knowledge, basically what this group will help us craft and finalize a document to use as a guideline for them to go out there and search for a list of candidates. As Dean Gould had talked about in the open meeting law, many find this challenging, but comparing yourself to other states, it's always good and bad, right? Some states require that every single candidate that places their name for consideration has to be posted. In Nevada, the process that we will embark upon allows for, up until the point that those individuals have identified as finalists invite in there, their names are kept confidential. So as the search firm goes out and identify candidates, I will work with actually the search firm to narrow down a list of finalists to take before this committee. We'll get direction from the committee. Is that 2 to 4 or the preferred numbers? Obviously, that needs to be a little fluid based upon the candidates and bringing individuals in. But to that point, those names are kept confidential. So that allows us a good deal of freedom to engage in open and honest discussions with potential candidates. Again, that the majority of these, if it's based upon previous searches, are not individuals that are on the market, right? It's those that we really feel would be a good fit for UNLV. Once those names, we've identified those finalists, then we'll go over the time frame. I'm going to let the Wheelers partners to talk about the time frames for identifying some of the finalists and when we hope to actually take this slate of candidates before this board. Then we will schedule for all those individuals that become finalists opportunities to come on campus and to visit. It's usually robust interviews that they're engaged in all type of constituencies. Based upon how we've done our previous searches, we try to bring them all in a very short period of time, and they crisscross each other, and they meet with faculty, they meet with students, they meet with alumni group. They have opportunities because it's a fit both ways, right, that we are selling ourselves, that this is a good place for them. But there'll be ample opportunity for everybody, not only this committee, but all our constituents, to meet face-to-face, have them do presentations to the committee, and then that feedback is assembled back to this group. And we try to keep that at a pretty short period of time, because once we put names out there in the public, we like to be respectful that that's not hanging out there for a long period of time, particularly if they're in existing jobs. It's always a bit nerve-wracking to have your name out there, so we try to bring them in a short period of time and engage in these discussions. Our last two searches we've done at Western Nevada College and CSN, we actually announced, and within a week we chose. It was that fluid. We brought those individuals in. They met with all the different groups, and then they were all here when we actually met with this group to get recommendations from this committee and from the advisory board on who the candidates would be. I think with that, I might just stop and pause, and there might be more questions, or we may want to have the Wheelers partners talk a little bit more about the process, but at any time, feel free. Let's keep this very informal. If you have questions now, we can attempt to answer them, or we could turn it over to the Wheelers partners, and they can talk more about the process and timeline that we're looking to bring in candidates before this board.
Any questions for the chancellor? Quiet group today. Okay. Thank you very much. We are now at the point where we will introduce Wheelers, and thank you for being here. As the Chancellor said, they are not new to Nevada. They did terrific work with our search at the College of Southern Nevada, and they have also worked with, among a wide array of other people, former UNLV President Samatras at North Texas University, and at this point, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much, and I will say that we very much look forward to working with each of you through the process, and we look forward to bringing you that next president for the university. Our process is a bit different than some other firms, same in some ways as well, too. But there are a few things that we feel are unique to our process. And as the Chancellor mentioned, we do not use database to pull individuals from. And that sometimes will raise eyebrows from committee members who are accustomed to working with firms who do, can just go into a database and pull a bunch of names and submit them. But we dig very deeply with our candidates. It's our belief that we have to bring a right fit for the organization. And there's a lot that goes into that right fit. We do a behavioral-oriented approach to our interviews and our selection with our candidates from our screening process in day one all the way through working with the committees in the interview process later on. And so everything looks at the factor of past behaviors predict future performance, looking at a couple of things, situations or tasks that individuals have experience themselves that tie into what they would be doing in the position, how they reacted to or how they dealt with those situations or tasks, and what the results were. And we work with our clients and our search committees to help put that in real time, how that would fit into the environment that they could be stepping into as the next president. So through our process, we'll be working with you guys a little bit later today and looking at the draft profile that we put together. Looking at not only what the individual is going to be doing in the position, which is your typical job description, but more importantly, what type person is going to fit into this role, is going to fit into the environment of the university. Some other factors we look at is not only the university, but also where the person is going to be living. What family or significant other issues may be there through the process that would make a person happy here or not happy here. We do believe that when you move an individual, you move that family unit, whatever that family unit may be or whatever that makeup of that unit may be. So we want to make sure that we are bringing the right person on site. So if you fall in love with the candidate, they're well prepared to make the move. So getting back to the database, the difference in pulling someone from a database and going out and seeking out candidates is, from the database, you're pulling based on requirements for a job. And going out and seeking individuals, which is what we do, you're looking for not only an individual who fits within the parameters of the requirements of the job, but also who's going to fit within the true fit of the organization. So we identify organizations that make sense from someone that could transfer from into this position, and individuals sitting in those organizations who are successful, happy, and typically not looking for a job. Those are the people who are making the biggest difference within the impact of their organizations, and those are the people that you want bringing to you. We'll talk a little bit about advertising a little bit later. I think there's an agenda item on that. But, we typically, over many years of doing this, have found that we very seldom receive good quality candidates at this level of position from ads. Ads serve a purpose. It does serve as an outreach. However, individuals who are typically looking at ads are individuals that are looking for jobs. And the person who is most likely going to be the successful person in this role is not going to be a person who's actively looking for a job, trying to run away from something, trying to get away from something to get here. It's going to be the work that we're going to do behind the scenes to bring those individuals here. I say all of that to say it is very important as we move forward today in looking at the description and the marketing brochure that we put in front of you, to make sure that we have refined that as much as we possibly can within reason. If you read it, and as we talk today, someone will probably have the thought or make the comment that we're looking for someone who walks on water. There was one person who walked on water. We're not going to find another one. However, we want to get as very close to that as we can. So we do want to cast the net as widely as we can. We want to be as unrestrictive, if that is a word, as we can in putting this document together, so we can cast the net as wide as we can. But we also want this to look like something that is very appealing to an individual that will pick it up and look at it. The document has a marketing slant to it. If you've looked at it, you see that already. It is not a job description. It is a marketing document. So you will find that there are incomplete sentences. There are fragments. There are bullet points. That is on purpose. It's sometimes hard when we're looking at an academic search to not have complete sentences and everything just perfect in the documents. But you have to think about an individual who is sitting at their desk, very busy, successful, not looking for a job. They have 15 things on their plate they have to finish for today, and they run across this email that comes up with a document. They open it up. Something has to catch their eye. And if there are bullet points, if there are fragmented sentences in there, they don't have to take a lot of time to read it. It's a quick view that says, this is something I want to come back when I have a little bit more time and look at. And then when they receive that telephone call from us, that they remember the document, they're willing to pick up the phone and talk with us and engage with us a little bit further. So that's a little bit of history around what we're going to be doing today and looking at from the process perspective to start the process. There are other documents that we will be using throughout the process that will be driven by this marketing document. We call it a search criteria, for lack of a better term. And we'll be working with the chancellor and the committee to develop some of those tools that will help us further narrow down the candidate pool as we start to talk with individuals. From a timing perspective, we are targeting, from our perspective, sometime first to second week maybe of March to come back to the chancellor with a group of candidates for him to review and discuss with us. Then hopefully the video interviews or face-to-face, whichever we decide to go in concert with the chancellor for that first group of candidates to narrow down to individuals who would then come in front of the committee and others for the on-site visits. And we're targeting mid-April for those on-site visits. Let me back up. That was before. We've gone back and looked at that. We're going to look at the mid part of February for the presentation of the candidates. The video interviews are face-to-face, whichever it may be, the end of February, first week of March. And then the end of March, maybe that last week of March, looking at having those on-site interviews. I apologize for backtracking there. We started out with a little bit later close day, but we talked with the chancellor and felt like we didn't want to stretch it out quite that long, and he agreed. So we're going to go with trying to close this thing out the last week of March for you. Any questions so far before we go any further? All right. Scott, do you want to add anything to the recruiting part or how we're going to go about generating and screening applicants?
Well, to your last point there, one item that I would mention that's some food for thought, and I think that makes our process a little bit unique, is that the candidates who elect to participate in our searches cannot do so by simply passing a CV to us and saying they're interested. And one of the reasons we get to a positive conclusion virtually on all of our searches and that CSN had such a wonderful result is that those candidates who do elect to participate are put through some rigorous moments during that process. They have homework to do. They will talk to Mike, who's not here, Mike Willis, myself, and Michael during the process, and probably one of our other team members as well. So there's a significant amount of time, attention, effort, emotion that has to be demonstrated to us by any candidates that we're going to move forward. And it has a beautiful effect of eliminating tire kickers from the process. Dean mentioned earlier that it's unfortunate to get to the end and then have people back out at the last moment. It's human behavior. Sometimes you certainly cannot, well, I can't forecast it, but and I don't think anybody in here can. But we do everything we can that as that funnel of candidates gets smaller and smaller and smaller and we get towards the conclusion of this search process, that every candidate who's in it to win it. And that's our mission and purpose on each and every search, and I don't expect any different results here. I have the enviable spot of being behind Tom and Michael, so there's very little else to say, but that was one thing that I observed.
Let me add one other thing that I certainly forgot to mention here, but is extremely important. We are very driven in our process by bringing forth a diverse slate of candidates as well. We pride ourselves on being able to bring forth a diverse slate of candidates. When we last looked, which was about a month ago, our placement rate of individuals who are in diverse categories in one way or the other is about 61% of the placements that we have, which is something we're very proud of, we work with. We certainly want to make sure that the person hired here is the most qualified person for the job, but we want to make sure that we do have a diverse slate that comes forth, so we want you to be very comfortable that is something that we take great pride and great stride in making sure that we accomplish.
Anything else before we prepare to get feedback from the advisory board on the profile? Okay, let me just make one comment before we start going around, and that is that the regents are the people that will be deliberating and making the final decision. The advisory board will be providing input and advice, as will the public through public comment. So you will have an opportunity as the advisory board when we go round to give your opinions based on the items in your packet and in the presentation that the consultants have just shared. If you have other comments after this meeting, please direct them via email to the Chief of Staff, Dean Gould, in the next week, and those will be forwarded to Wheelis, so you don't have to feel that it's either speak now or forever hold your peace. However, in order for them to do their work, we need your input within a reasonable amount of time. So let's start at this side of the table. Let's go around and we'll take input on the profile or anything that Wheelis has so far outlined or any concerns you may have about the process moving forward.
Chair Lieberman.
Chairman, yes. Can I make one, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I do have a clarification, if I may, Chair yes. Lieberman. If and Dean Gould, we're now going into item 5 to discuss the profile. Is that correct? In item 4, did we need to give direction to the chancellor and to the search about the range of the finalists that we maybe wanted to bring back? Does that have to be defined then, or is that coming later?
Now, or do we do that after the?
We could do it as under 4, or we could do it under 5, but 4 is probably where it makes the most sense, just because it's part of the process. So it might make sense to start talking about how many finalists you're thinking and to bring back in March, April, May, whenever that's going
to be. So I would entertain a motion.
There's no motion on number 4. This is just discussion.
Oh, discussion.
The motion is on the leadership profile.
Okay. So right now, we could vote to bring back 10 people. I think that's a little obsessive, but usually it's 2 to 4, 3 to 5, something in that range, so that we get a wide variety of quality candidates and that you also see a diverse number of people before you put in either your verbal input or your regent's vote. So I would entertain discussion on the number of candidates that we would want to consider moving forward.
And if I could clarify, Mr. Chair,
yes.
You're talking about the finalists now. These are just the number of finalists that the chancellor will bring back.
Correct.
After he and the search consultants go through their whole process, to the next and last meeting of this group, where these people will be brought in to be interviewed and hopefully someone selected as a recommended finalist. So the question is, how many people do you think is appropriate to try to bring back? Understanding, based on what Chancellor Riley said, it's very fluid, right? Because you never know who your pool's going to be. You don't know who's going to stay in, who's going to stay out. But in your ideal world, how many people would everyone want to see here that's manageable?
Regent Hayes?
I just wanted the clarification from you, Chair Lieberman. You'd said a vote. This is an information-only item, so you're just kind of soliciting opinions. And
correct.
Then how will we determine which of those opinions we're
a
going
guide
to
for the consultant team to work towards.
Okay.
Any suggestions, any feedback, any comments?
Mr. Chair?
Greg?
Greg McKinley, can you give us any kind of history on university positions in Nevada or the chancellor on how many candidates we brought to the table and then how many withdrew once they found out their names were going to become public?
The last time we started with five, we ended with three. I don't know about President Harder's era. But it's usually 3 to 5.
Clarification, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Last time for UNLV, I believe we did start, I mean, Regent Brava chaired it, he can correct us, but we started with 5, ended with 3, but those 3 were not all part of the initial 5.
Correct.
So typically for the searches we've done in NSHE, what I've seen is we have 3 or 4 usually. I guess if I'm talking again, I'll make a recommendation to the body. That we have no less than 2 and no more than 5. I mean, if there's 2 that just really stand out and they're both agreeing to come, then I'm trusting in the chancellor, the chair of the committee, and the search firm. If they think 2 are just so far and above, I would be okay with that. But I don't want us to have 6 or 7 people here. I think that we're asking them to use their skills and knowledge to help us get it to a manageable list of, I would say, no more than 4 or 5.
I would also recommend 3 to 5. Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question?
Please.
Is that appropriate? Because this sometimes happens, and I would just like to get a sense from the regents what your sense is. Sometimes we end up with 1. And the issue is, and people feel differently about it, and we're not voting, as Regent Hayes said, so this isn't cast in stone. This is more to get your sense. Some people take the view that bringing 1 back is problematic because it sends a message that it's almost a set person. Other people say, well, we're better off if there's 1 person who's really qualified and that's the only qualified person, I'd rather see him or her. I would just like to get a sense of your view on that, because that conversation could happen.
Because we're not set in stone, mm-hmm. I'd really be comfortable with 3 to 5, but obviously I think 1 to 2 could be awkward at times. I'm more comfortable with 3 to 5, but obviously if the search firm or the open meeting law process leaves us with 1 or 2, that's the reality.
Chair Lieberman.
Regent Carvalho.
I would like to ask the Wheelis partners what they would do in that situation with only 1 right.
We are firm believers on erring on the side of inclusion. And that's, if you look upon that as a risk management issue, so be it. However, we have seen over time and many, many circumstances, life intervenes sometimes on the part of candidates, things that are unforeseen. So that may cause somebody to drop out. I think the 3 to 5 range is completely within reason. And we would probably gravitate to the top of that range, to be candid with you. The other thing to consider right now is this. You know, 10,000 people a day are eligible to retire in the United States of America. Doesn't mean everybody's going to. But even if half do, that's still a considerable number. And Michael and I and others in our industry have been talking about the war for talent for years. It was coming. It was coming. It was coming. And we are in the middle of it. So it is. If you look at the marketplace right now, it's a candidate's marketplace. There are more opportunities than there are candidates at this point in time. So we must go out and make a compelling story about our client, the opportunity it represents for them, and then bring a reasonable number to the dance, which we certainly will do. And I think we will be striving for five. We will be striving for that. But if the regents are comfortable with the range of 3 to 5, I don't think there'll be any difficulty meeting that. Did that answer your question?
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify. So you're confident that you will have 3 to 5 candidates. You won't be in a situation where there may only be one. You're fairly confident.
Confident being the operative word, yes. Okay. Highly.
President Harder?
Chair, I just wondered, will the committee then not see any of the resumes or any of the material on the candidates except for the very final group?
That is typically the process because of the open meeting law. If we were to share more with you, we'd have to make more public, and that becomes troublesome, not only for us, but for the candidates.
Well, that's better than it was when I was chosen, because there were 10 people who interviewed first, then 5, then 3, and it was all public then, too. And although the law had not been changed until, as you said, 2015, that was still the practice, that people had to be publicly interviewed. That's crazy. I'm not recommending that, by the way. I'm just telling you what happened then.
Yeah, President Harder, that was going to my comment previously, is that, you know, we do have some flexibility here on the open meeting, is that up until the point we have those finalists, those names are confidential, so
that's
we can
good.
Engage in these conversations, which I think is a real positive, and then bring the top candidates to 3 to 5 to this committee where their name will be public and they will do public presentations.
That's
but
good.
Before that, no other resumes good. Are circulated with the committee.
Just or the to regents, clarify that, too.
Or the regents. So it's important to know it, they don't go to the regents or they don't go to the committee until they're finalists. And then when the names are finalists, we open it up.
Good. Thank you.
I think we are ready at this point to
Chairman Lieberman, it's Michael Yukira. May I ask a foundation please. Question of Wheelis and then another question? In your experience, or maybe just from research, what is the average tenure of a university president?
About 3 years. You see some up to 5 years, but typically it's closer to the 3-year mark is what we've been seeing in the market for the past, 3 years or so, actually. Yeah. You know, there again, it's a couple of things drive that, I think. You have organizations who really are at a point where they have to make some decisions, and do you want to bring somebody in who's going to shake things up and not be afraid to step on toes to get things done quickly? Those type individuals are not going to stay around very long because they're coming in to do that, and they're going to be stepping on the toes, versus somebody that's going to be wanting to stay somewhere for 10 or 15 years, who's going to tiptoe around and not step on many toes. May get some things done, but take much longer to get those things done. So, you know, part of tenure in looking at presidents these days is what organizations are looking at. Many of them, because of continued cutbacks from state funding and so forth, are looking for individuals who are more outside of the box and willing to take some risks and step on those toes to get some things done. So that skews it a little bit.
And Michael, what I was saying earlier, because it is a candidate's market, presidents and deans and vice chancellors and provosts are, and if any of them are in the room, will probably tell you they're contacted with monotonous regularity these days about opportunities. you can almost spend your entire day looking at opportunities. They have to be very judicious about what they look at and what they consider. That may have something to do with the reduced tenure timeline.
Just to add, I think the three-year mark is a current mark. I'm not sure it was a mark previously in history. In President Harder's time, I think the tenure was a little longer than it is now.
Well, and it wasn't because I didn't step on any toes, might I say. 11 years, I stepped on a lot of toes. People okay. can stay a long time and have a good tenure.
That's where I was going.
Peter, go ahead.
So, yeah, I echo her comment, and I would say that the gentleman made me feel very uncomfortable with his comments, and I'm hoping that that is not going to be trying to articulate this in a way. I hope that's not going to go into the questioning because I disagreed with what he said. I don't think that you being here 3 years means that, you know, you're more likely to step on toes and be more aggressive. I think good leadership is good leadership, and I certainly would like to see the next person be a person of the caliber that will stick around for a long time and step on a lot of toes, because that's what's needed.
I roll over toes, but I don't step on them. Anyway, I think we're now letting the committee advise, which is what you're mandated to do. So let's start over here next to Regent McAdoo. And we're looking specifically for feedback on the job profile that you've been presented and that has been discussed by the consultants.
I think you'll start with Dr.
Alamo?
No, Ahmad.
I'm sorry.
Material looks good to me, and I have nothing to add.
I'm going to echo. I was part of the search committee for the previous president, and I think we articulated a good number of people that should come before us. Having just one present here is, I don't think that's going to happen, and our colleagues to my right here have vocalized that he's very optimistic. I think the word you used, that we're not going to get to that point. This is UNLV. And I think there's a lot of qualified people that are going to want to be here. So I think I'm excited to see that 3 to 5 that we're going to get. And I think I agree with everything that's been said so far.
Thank you. Phil, can you turn on your mic?
There we go. If we're looking at this packet, correct? I mean, I think it's excellent. I've tried to read through it a couple times while we're sitting here. The only thing I think I'd be a little remiss, because I'm also a 25-year member of Student Affairs, is that there's a great coverage of the diversity of the campus, but there's such a vibrant Student Affairs life, and the co-curricular part that is a big part of our campus that a president would also be dealing with on a daily basis. I personally like to see that parts of the Student Affairs life highlighted a little bit more.
Thank you. Senator Cannizzaro.
I don't think I have anything to add, and I would certainly echo my colleagues' comments.
Thank you. Keep going this way, please.
Ken Evans for the record. Excuse me. I think it's a very good document. I like the fact that it talks about economic development and the impact the university will have on that. In addition to that, you touched on the diversity piece. That's important. People need to be both qualified and able to address diversity. One thing that I may make note of is there anything that could be added in here about the amount of procurement activity and the ability to make sure that small, diverse businesses could participate in the procurement activity generated by a campus like UNLV? That would be my only comment.
Thank you.
Well, I can just add a little bit to what everybody has said. I think the brochure looks fine. Somewhat like what Phil mentioned, I would like to see a little bit more of a focus on the people that are at UNLV. Who are the faculty? Where do they come from? sure there's diversity and everything, but where are we getting our people from, and how long have they stayed here? What are they doing? What are their interests? I think that 3 to 5 would be something that my colleagues would like to see as a number. I don't think we would we'd feel really great about the fact that we had such a wonderful search firm and such a wonderful university and ended up with one person. We'd like to see more than that.
Adam Garcia for the record. I think this is a fine-looking pamphlet document. However, on page 12, the fifth bullet point down, it talks about supporting a diverse faculty, staff, and student population, and I'm very supportive of that. However, I'd like to see a little bit stronger language included somewhere in this document related to demonstration of a commitment to a diverse faculty, staff, and student population. I think that it, and by means this is not critical, but I think it glosses over diversity when it comes to a number of different issues, and I'd like to see that strengthened in this document. Thank you.
Peter Gray, representing the Grad College. One comment I would add is on the top of page 2 where it talks about UNLV, maybe break down the number of students to undergraduate students versus graduate versus professional students. We have approximately 4,500 graduate students, nearly 1,000 professional students in dental medicine and law, for example. So I think that could be broken down. And I would add that in terms of backgrounds of the candidates, all else being equal, someone who comes at this search with a background at a research-intensive university is probably going to be a better fit than someone from, say, a community college or a small liberal arts college. That's not necessarily clear from the materials here. There's a lot of emphasis on research, as there should be, but graduate education is intimately intertwined with research productivity, and hence there's a lot of overlap, and that should probably color the background of the ideal candidates for this position.
Peter Guzman, I like the document, and I also enjoyed very much working with these consultants for CSN, and we found an incredible president there. So I'm sure that this is going to be a wonderful process.
President Harder, welcome home.
Thank you. Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people that having had 6 presidents in the last 13 years has not always resulted in the kind of stability and energy that a person who does commit themselves, I'm not talking about forever, but maybe 5 years or more if they possibly can bring to an institution, both a vision and some sense that there is stability in the leadership and the vision stays strong and it's articulated over and over by a strong person. I think at this stage in UNLV's history, that would be helpful. That having had 6 presidents in 13 years, there has been a lack of that. And I've heard that from students and foundation people, and I'm surprised that wasn't more broadly shared, and perhaps I'm wrong about it. I'm hearing it, you know, anecdotally, so it may not be the way people feel.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Lieberman. For the record, Kirk Hendrick, and I'll echo the comments about I think the document was very well drafted, captures the university's essence. My only question was on page 9. There's a list of sports that doesn't seem to be a complete list. I was just wondering, is that intentional or is that an oversight?
That information and much of this through here was taken from the website, and when we got to the sports section, honestly, there was not much information to pull from. So I did a Google search of the sports that you had available here, and that's the list that came up. So anything that you guys can add to that would be very helpful. I think that is very
men's
important.
Men's basketball sure. would feel bad about not being included.
Yeah. There's a picture.
Chair Lieberman, as someone who has spent years trying to convince someone that we do more than basketball here, it was surprising not to see it. If you go to the athletics page, you can push sports and pull down, and you'll see the 16 NCAA Division I sports that are supported here at UNLV for 518 student-athletes.
And we have a wonderful hockey program that until 5 minutes ago nobody knew about. So,
We can have our athletic director provide a full listing of all our sports.
Anything else, Mr. Hendrick?
No, thank you.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to speak about this good document. I agree, I really like it. But I think there are a few things that maybe could also be highlighted. I would echo the comments made earlier about the breakdown of students. I would say the same thing about faculty and perhaps some faculty highlights, because I think we do have some outstanding faculty. I would also comment just on page 5 in the very last paragraph there that we talk about some of our graduate degree programs and professional schools. If I just look at sort of the headers that precede like this language, I'm not sure that I would, if I was looking for the professional schools, I would look under a header called UNLV Attains Highest Status as Research University. I think you may want to break out the professional schools a bit and also highlight some of their successes. I represent also the School of Medicine. That's a brand new school. I think some of our initial achievements are probably not on the website. We've really been focusing our efforts on other things and have been told that we cannot change the website for a period of time. So I would like to see some of those graduate programs and professional schools really highlighted, because I think there's, I think, number one, their existence, which is not a minor feat, and their accomplishments, I think, really reflect the commitment of our state to produce professionals of these various backgrounds.
Thank you. Dr. Langston.
Thank you. My interest, of course, was looking at the emphasis on diversity and women and how that will manifest itself with the new president. And even though there's some language and focus in here, I think we could highlight our diversity as a minority-serving institution, as well as the diversity in our community and among our faculty a little bit better.
Noella Forge, I guess the advantage or disadvantage of being in the second half is I don't really have much to add that hasn't already been said, but I'll echo that overall this does make me excited about UNLV.
Anne McDonough, Academic Success Center. I think this is a very worthy document and not easy to do, because there are so many complex areas to try to distill. I would ask that we look on page 8 under student achievement at the top and propose that we include some benchmarks on student achievement. We've made some real strides over the last 3 years in our retention, progression, completion numbers. If I'm a president looking at this institution, I'd like to see those numbers. Also, unit-centrically here, the ASC houses all of our student-athletes. We hit a top record for UNLV in a 3.09 team average with our the team GPA average. I think that'd be kind of cool to include that. So thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Greg McKinley from the UNLV Foundation Board. I also like this document. One thing I would add is one of the major responsibility of a university president is to raise funds, and I don't see anything in there on that. And there has been quite a bit of support from the community for the university. Just in the last 5 years, UNLV has raised $375 million for a 60-year-old institution. I think that's very good, and I think it shows candidates that the community is willing to support this university.
Thank you for your leadership. Next.
For the record, Stephanie Molina, GPSA. As one of the student representatives on the committee, I really like that the documents mention that it's a student-centered institution. It also mentions first-generation and non-traditional students, which we do tend to have a lot here at UNLV. I also like the most diverse campus parts of it. However, I didn't see any mention of the fact that UNLV is an HSI and a PZ institution. Those are great accomplishments that we should probably highlight on there. I've been here 10 years, and I think just within the last few years, you could definitely see those changes taking place. I also wanted to ask if there was going to be more on research, scholarship, and creative activity. There was, like, I think it was about a sentence of that. I mean, as graduate students and professional students, which have actually started doing a lot of research, that's kind of what we do a lot. So if you could highlight some of that graduate work as well as professional that's been done. I know Dr. Gray and Dr. Kuhls kind of mentioned that a little bit. I think those are all the comments I have right now. Thanks.
I'd suggest on page 10 that Clark County has a lot more to offer than a cornucopia of buffets, and I think we could probably do a better job describing what a wonderful place this is to live and work, and I would be happy to help contribute to that information if anyone needs suggestions. And while not related to this item, I would 100% concur with Dr. Harder in terms of the longevity. I think that is really, while there's no guarantee, I think it's absolutely that stability, both from a business perspective, a local government perspective. When you have a search that takes over a year and then it takes over a year to introduce somebody to the campus, I think having a somewhat of a commitment from them that they're going to be here long enough to build those relationships is really important.
Thank you.
So one of the first pieces that I wanted to touch on is I very much agree with Dr. Langston and Director Garcia in regards to really emphasizing the diversity component of this, because that is one of the biggest pieces of identity of UNLV, and it's something that we're very proud of because that is our population, that is our staff and students, and we should truly be focusing on finding someone who supports that wholeheartedly. The next piece that I wanted to touch on is similar to what President Molina stated, that it does mention being a student-centered institution. Even in my time as an undergraduate, I'm in my fifth year now, thankfully about to graduate, we have taken so many strides that are visible to, again, students who have only been here a few years to become more student-centered. And so I would actually like that to see more emphasis in this as well. I think that it should be one of the top pieces that is seen throughout, because ultimately the whole point of having an institution for education is to educate students. And it should be a student-focused campus with somebody who has students at heart almost 100% of the time for everything that they're focusing on. But other than that, I do think that it's very comprehensive and touches on a lot of the wonderful pieces of UNLV that hopefully will get people to want to come and be here and to serve in those capacities for us. So thank you.
Jonah, go ahead.
Jonas Peterson, I believe the document is well put together. I think it highlights the university and community well. I appreciate the inclusion on page 12 of the university's role in leading regional economic development. And my final point would be to agree with some of the other committee members that I think a longer tenure for our next candidate and including that in the process as a preference would be helpful as we're evaluating potential candidates.
Thank you.
So I'd like to just reiterate what almost everyone has said. Well done on producing this document. What stood out to me, I think, more than anything else, was the top tier component of this document. To me, this is maybe the 800-pound gorilla in the document. Whomever comes in as the next president, this is going to be an extraordinarily difficult undertaking. It's going to be immensely challenging for that person. And I'm not sure how I would do it or how I would ask you specifically to do it, but to emphasize this top-tier initiative and the time frame that we seem to be asking the person to execute this top-tier initiative. Maybe 6 years from today is what I think. Maybe the Chancellor of the Regents can correct me, but I think the greater Las Vegas metropolitan area still remains the biggest or one of the biggest metropolitan areas in the country that does not have a top-tier initiative. And so for economic development reasons, technology transfer reasons, community reasons, growth reasons, to me, that is what stands out in this document, and ways to emphasize that and push it hard. And when you vet the candidates before you bring the finalists to us, how you vet them with regard to their thoughts on top tier and how they're going to specifically accomplish top tier would be very important to me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mary Beth Seawald, I appreciate the opportunity to weigh in here. I would agree with the others, Jonas and Dr. Harder, about stability. I would agree that you can step on toes and still maintain some longevity and stability, and I think that's needed in this case. I would recommend we do discuss fundraising to the gentleman's earlier question on page 13. It says a willingness to engage in and skilled at fundraising and knowledgeable of large capital campaigns. I would suggest some stronger language there around criteria and accountabilities, expectations and measurables. So I'm sure that those are things that will be looked at in depth, but I would just perhaps things like proven track record and showing, demonstrating what their success in the past has been around fundraising and so forth. Thank you.
So Michelle Sposito, for the record, in my role at the university, I regularly review recruitment efforts. And so my focus was on page 14. I wanted to see what are the qualifications that we're looking for. And here I appreciate that they are listed and appear to be very objective criteria, that we're things that we can see that are demonstrated by the candidate. And I would definitely echo that I think something that's missing from that piece is the demonstration or commitment of experience and working with the diverse populations. That's something that we would regularly recommend in our search committees here within the recruitment efforts that happen on campus.
For the record, Michael Yakira, I think it's an excellent document. I'm glad that President Harder took my question to where I should have taken the question. That's really where I was going. I shouldn't have left it alone. I think it's important for us to have an objective to have a president tenured longer than the average, because the past six presidents, the longest tenure we've had is 5 years. Past five presidents, President Harder was 11 years. Two of them were acting presidents, so that doesn't necessarily count. But I think we're all on the same page with respect to our desire. I think the document is great. One of the things I would suggest to you, similar to what I've seen in other documents that are meant to be position descriptions, is a one-page summary of what they're going to be reading to entice the reader to read the rest. And that would be focused on the initiatives and actions and things that have happened at this university over the past several years, whether it be the medical school or our Carnegie Mellon recognition, the hotel school's recognition, the improvement in recognition of the law school, the improvement in the business school, all things are on a positive inflection point. And I think there needs to be a read-on part of this document that suggests why somebody should read the next 15 pages, because it's very chock full, but I think it would be helpful in assuring that there is a desire to be part of this process without having to read the whole thing.
Thank you. Regent Moran, I know you're there. You're blocked by a cowboy hat, but please start us off.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll share just a couple of thoughts, having listened to everybody in the room. And first, you know, from my standpoint, I appreciate you all showing up and putting time into this, because, you know, UNLV is really the driver of workforce and workforce development in Southern Nevada. And so to see a distinguished board here giving up their time when they could be doing a lot more diverse things on a Friday afternoon, certainly with their families and whatnot, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I will share two things. One, Greg, I think you made a terrific point. I think that we need to make the portion of the letter or introduction or job description or whatever you want to call it, what was provided the materials. I think we need to make a more robust statement as to how important the fundraising aspect is to this position. And I think that this is something that we have had some leaders in the past that have done a tremendous job. You know, we can do the math. Mary Beth had made some indications as to, you know, quantitative research that we could kind of look into indicators in terms of past fundraising of past administrations. I know having worked with Dr. Jessup, I mean, the guy was unbelievable. I mean, he raised more money than I mean, it was just incredible. So I think that's a very, very important part of the equation is being able to have somebody who could really serve as the ambassador of this institution, kind of a CEO who's in a position that they can manage individuals, manage folks, and really be able to keep the trains running all on time because there are so many issues that a president deals with. I'm looking forward to hearing President Carter spend some more time with President Carter over the course of the series of meetings that we have set for this board and for this exploratory committee because she did it for 11 years, and I would take most of her comments extremely to heart because, again, she has done it. She did it successfully for a long period of time. And I also would echo the remarks made by Michael over to my right in terms of the longevity issue. But I think UNLV at the end of the day is deserving of a rock star. And this is not just somebody who should just, because of mediocrity, this is not a mediocrity play, in my opinion. This is a play that, as long as it takes, we need to get the best gal for the job or guy for the job. And we need to make that happen for UNLV. We're at a point now in Southern Nevada where we're getting close to 2.5 million people in population. And this is, again, our workforce driver. The board made a very savvy, sophisticated, did great due diligence on President Zaragoza at the community colleges. That was a terrific search. It went down phenomenal. I see a lot of the same faces in the room that made that decision. So hopefully that will be a segue to finding the right person for UNLV. And I, you know, let's don't take the easy path. Let's make sure that this is a robust search of all individuals. And let's find the best person for the job. And the only question that I have, and again, I've taken a little bit more time than I wanted to take, but I'm a lawyer by trade, so I really can't help myself, is just the search committee. I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to find where presidents are typically being hired from. Are they being hired as, you know, business deans at different institutions? Are they coming out of the Honors College at a specific institution? Are they, you know, are they somebody that we're hiring away from Sun Microsystem, you know, or you know, some other technology company that's been tremendously successful? So I'd like to see, you know, what is the trend in terms of where are we pulling these individuals that you're seeing in presidential searches? You know, the pool of individuals that are being pressed and searched for these positions. And I think that's something that could be added to this this brief introductory packet that you all have put together. Because, again, we should be taking a look at people that are tried and true in terms of those that have been in positions of management, know what it's like to write a paycheck to somebody, an employee, and not having been an employee their entire life. This should be somebody who has served as an employer or who has served on a big board and has served as a CEO or a CFO of a big company. And so, again, I'd like to see where are institutions that are similarly situated to UNLV and Nevada, and where are these other institutions pulling their individuals from?
Thank you, Regent McMichael.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here, and I just have one comment in regards to the brochure. Is this going out as is, or is the brochure in color?
It goes out electronically, and it is in full color.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Vice Chair DeBrava.
Thank you, Chair Lieberman.
I like the document. Appreciated everyone's comments. I was getting to the point. I was just scanning when it talked about locale and the Clark County. I think Commissioner Naft, you were going to maybe beef it up a little bit and certainly mention the stadium, maybe NHL, NFL, maybe highlight our airport and connectivity with the world. I thought that might be really important. And then the last thing, I thought maybe the shared governance piece was a little light. I didn't know if that could be expanded a little bit about how the president and the shared governance on campus and with the community and the state.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Lieberman. I want to echo, again, I appreciate everybody's attendance here today. There's a lot more you could be doing on a Friday afternoon, so this is a testament to your commitment to the institution. The one thing that I think is unique that nobody else has said that I agree with, but I think it might be also beneficial to include that UNLV works closely and collaboratively with its sister institutions in Nevada under the NCHI umbrella. The UNLV, in terms of research, does a lot of work with DRI. To use a term that I was trying not to use, but feeder schools in terms of CSN and Nevada State and our other community colleges. So there's a pipeline that goes to UNLV, and I think it's important to include that this institution does work closely with other institutions in the state. Thank you.
Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Regent Lieberman. I think Regent DeBravo took a peek at my notes on part of it. First, folks like Greg and Dr. Coles and Dean McDonough that had some suggestions, please email them to them so they have them. I think all of those areas really need to be beefed up a little bit, particularly some historical information on fundraising or achievements in academics and some of the professional schools. One thing we've done, as you can see right across the street, is we've added a brand new dorm across the street. If you look around, there are others that are not technically affiliated with UNLV, but we've got hundreds of thousands of new beds for students right around the area. And that's a huge change to this campus in just the last several months. I would highlight the changing residential environment that I think that's going to make a big difference on this campus. As Regent DeBravo pointed out, I'd like to highlight more about the location. We hear so often that, you know, we're just a bunch of casinos. We've got NHL. We've got NFL. You talked earlier about this is a decision for a family to move here, not just the presidential candidate. You know, how many national merit scholars do we have coming out of our high schools or other things like that highlight some of the, you know, people want to knock our school system, and there are some gems here. Maybe highlight some of the things that are going on in the local school district because their kids could be going here. Athletics, not just addition to putting the 16 teams, but, you know, we've got national champions in different sports, whether it was golf, whether it was basketball, whether it was Sheila Tar Smith. I mean, we've had national champions. We win conference championships. Maybe highlight, you know, 16 sports over the last number of years have won X number of Mountain West Conference championships. UNLV has been to among the most NCAA tournaments in basketball. I mean, I think it's top 30-ish now, all time. Finally, I just loved what Michael Yakira said about having kind of a one page. I mean, this is great, but we got to get somebody to read the 15 pages. Maybe just highlight and tease with bullets. You talked about bullets attract people, and I agree. Have some key 10 or 15 bullets on one page that, you know, raised $375 million, added, you know, whatever it is, 1,500 residential beds in the area, research this, Carnegie Tier 1. Oh, and I did have one other comment. I said finally. I'm sorry. On page 2, big in red right in the middle, it says by 2025, UNLV will be recognized as a top-tier public university in research, education, and community impact. But nothing follows up to explain how that recognition is achieved. We did just recently achieve Carnegie Tier 1, which I think none of us believe is the end. It is one of the key steps along the way. But when that stands out in such big letters, the question is, as a reader is, well, what does that mean? How do I accomplish that? We did just achieve Carnegie Tier 1, so I think that needs to be highlighted, but is there a way to answer that question? But the rest of it I think is great, some great suggestions, and thanks to everybody that offered them.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo.
Thank you, Chair Lieberman. So I don't really have anything to add to all the wonderful comments that have been shared, but I do want to say to each of you in the room representing the UNLV community, besides the Board of Regents up here. I have heard what you've said. I have written it down. I've taken to heart what you have in your brochure. And I thank you for that, because that's the information that we need to hear from you, as well as we look to bringing the president for your and our university here. So thank you.
Wow. Being last is like everybody has said everything. I just wanted to say that it's a great snapshot. The brochure is a great snapshot of what's happening in our valley, and specifically focused on UNLV. The diversity part, if you sprinkle diversity more throughout the document, it makes it seem like it's more genuine. Yes, it is. It does say that diversity, and it says, you know, over and over again about the diverse students and about the diverse staff and faculty and administratives. But if you kind of scatter it through the document a little bit more, it seems more genuine. And also about the rock stars, I think that was Regent Moran that made the comment about rock star. The way to achieve stability, I went to a conference, it was the Association of Governance Boards, and 3 to 5 years is the average of the president across the country. No matter, you know, it's, yes, we can get somebody to stay longer, but it's just not happening in today's environment, because it is the candidates market. And I just believe the way to achieve stability is not necessarily time, but between mentoring and the processes that the person leaves in place for people to follow. So maybe that can be integrated to get a clearer track of where the person here today sees the university in 5 to 7 to 10 years, and then mentor people behind them to come along and make sure that the boat stays on track. And with that, I'm done. Oh, wait, one more thing. You mentioned North Las Vegas. Thank you. That's my district. Yay.
Let me just give my own personal comment, and then we'll call for a motion. What I'm hearing, and what I'm very glad to be hearing, is the focus on shared governance, student leadership, faculty, staff, alumni, and that type of engagement, and a focus on the student experience, as well as quality teaching and research and Tier 1. And all these are vital components to not only the job description, but to the profile and the candidates, which each of us will have an opportunity to question and bring up as this process moves forward. So with that in mind, I'd like to call for a motion to approve the job profile. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Lieberman. I would like to make a motion to direct the Chancellor, in consultation with the search consultants, to finalize the leadership profile based on the comments from the committee and the advisory members.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a motion by Regent Carvalho and a second by Regent Hayes. Any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, pardon me, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Ken Evans, for the record. Not that we would want to hold the process up, but is it possible, in concert with the final document being prepared, to have that distributed to us as an
correct
ad hoc committee?
The process now is, if you have any other feedback to the discussion we just had around the table, please email it to the Chief of Staff by Friday of next week. And then all of that information, as well as the information that was obtained today, will be forwarded to the search consultant, and they will begin their work accordingly.
And we will send out final draft, everybody, too.
Yes. You will see it before it goes out in the public. However, there will be No?
Okay. Unfortunately, no, because they need to get moving. And so if we send it out and ask for another round, it'll never get out.
I just meant the final draft. We'll be sending it out to everybody.
Final version.
Final version, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ken Evans, for the record, that's what I was making clear to, not looking to hold the process up, but it would be nice to be informed of what the final document looks like.
Thank Correct. You. Any other questions?
And if you need my email, although we can, Winter can send it to you, but I can give it to you. It's dgould, G-O-U-L-D, at ng.nevada.edu. Okay, and I will wait until a week from today, and I'll send all those comments to Wheelis at one time. Okay, so you guys will get them after next Friday, okay? Thanks.
We'll move on to agenda item number 6, and that is advertising options. Go ahead.
All right. As I mentioned earlier in section 4, you know, we do advertise to assist in getting the word out, but advertising is extremely expensive these days, and it does not produce good results at this level. If you are advertising for various other levels within the organization, then that story changes quite a bit. With the president situation, we are looking, as we mentioned before, for individuals who are happy, employed, not looking. That requires us reaching out to those individuals and engaging them. However, what we do receive sometimes from advertisements are referrals, which can be very positive. Where we will get our best referrals, however, is from this group and individuals here within the university organization that has individuals they would like to submit to us. But part of the advertising piece certainly is making sure that as an organization, we are meeting your advertising requirements based on policy. You are under OFCCP regulations as well, being an individual that receives some federal funds, so we want to make sure that we cover those bases as well. And advertising does help go a long way in being able to show, if you had to prove that you made every effort to recruit individuals who were from underserved populations or other diverse areas, that you did that. So our recommendation really helps cover that. The Chronicle of Higher Education is pretty much the number one place that universities advertise these days for president positions. What I like about the Chronicle is that they do have a diversity distribution option that we always select. You do pay a little extra for that, but it does mean that the posting goes out not only in the Chronicle, we do this online to keep the cost down, but it also goes out to around 110, 120 or so other organizations of diversity. Or with a diversity focus, and many of those will take that same advertisement and link that to their websites or even post it on their websites. So that does extend the value there of that advertising. Diverse Issues in Higher Education is another very reputable organization that we have used in the past, as well as Higher Ed Jobs. There are hundreds and hundreds of other means of advertising, but those are the three top that we feel strongly about based on our experience in working with other clients and kind of monitoring over the past many years of where you get the best bang for your buck and the best exposure. So those are the areas that we are recommending that we do place advertisements. We are certainly open to others if you have others that are very important, but there again, keeping in mind that we want to be very careful with the expenditures of the organization's funds. We want to spend that wisely and judiciously, and these are three very reasonably priced ways that we can do this. We do get questions occasionally about the print version of the Chronicle. It is extremely expensive, and when you do it print, it usually goes out once, maybe twice. There again, where we see the most response comes from that online, because most people are not looking at print these days, they're looking at online. So with all three of these organizations, we would place it initially for a 30-day period, and then it can be extended after that if we would like to extend it further. But initially, these would be our recommendations.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I can make a suggestion, maybe AGB, the American Governing Boards, which is an organization that, you know, reached, and also the ACCT.
Any other comments or suggestions? I don't, even though this is an item for possible action, I don't know that we need a motion. Certainly, if one of the regents wanted to make a motion regarding advertising, we could accept it. But I think it is just the protocol of the consultant and the desire of the committee to have it appropriately advertised. Regent Carvalho, if you feel differently, we can formalize a motion. Anyone? Seeing that, we'll move into new business. And what this is if you have other business items that you would like to see on future agendas, it is possible that the next formal meeting of this group will be when we actually have candidates, but if there are agenda items that you think need to be addressed as part of that, please let us know. Seeing none, we'll move into public comment, and I would invite public comment from anyone in the room, be it in the gallery or elsewhere on the dais.
Hello, my name is Janice McKay. I'm the chair of the UNLV Faculty Senate. As you can imagine, there's a wide variety of opinions all across campus as to who our next president should be and how that should come about. But the one clear message that we have gotten, and I believe I'm really just reiterating what started with President Harder, is that we're seeking stability. We need to get on with the business of the university, of doing our research, of educating our students. And the constant changes in leadership have definitely taken their toll. And as we have achieved R1 status but want to keep it, and as we aspire to higher status, it's important that we are able to stabilize and move forward. And how that looks, there's a wide variety of opinions across campus, but I want to specifically say that the faculty are seeking stability, however that comes about. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Doug Unger, immediate past chair of the UNLV Faculty Senate and immediate past chair of the Council of Faculty Senate Chairs for the Nevada System of Higher Education, and I just want to reinforce what Chair McKay said. In fact, I wasn't going to make public comment, but as soon as I heard the statement that the search firm might be looking for a leader to, quote, shake things up and step on toes, I felt a chill. Because as President Harder pointed out, after six presidents in 13 years, our faculty is feeling a bit of whiplash. And there have been times when I've looked at the leadership changes that have been happening and I've felt echoing in my head a line from Sophocles in a translation by David Green. The ship is pilotless, and the passengers are scrambling in confusion in the crowded passageways. It's felt like that at times. So what we are looking for, and I hope the search firm will emphasize, is that we would very much like to seek a visionary, sound leader who can help us build on this university's already significant achievements into the future and help enable the faculty to achieve even more of our top-tier goals that we are well on the road toward achieving if we can just find the stability to do it. This would be in the best service of our students and in the future of our university and the faculty's opinion. Another factor that I haven't heard mentioned here is that we would like a leader who demonstrates a great deal of diplomacy toward our governor, our legislature, our business community, and the greater Las Vegas community, rather than someone who steps on toes. So thanks very much for keeping that in mind, and I'd like to thank everyone on this committee for serving. Thank you.
Chairman, may I clarify?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Michael, I want to clarify something because I do not want anyone leaving here thinking or saying that the search firm said we were going to be looking for somebody kicking tires. We were asked a question, and that question was, we were asked a question, and that question was, what are we seeing in the market as far as length of service for a president? And we gave that. I further went on to explain how various organizations were looking for different individuals, and the type of individuals that you were looking for can make an impact on how long the individual is here. So we are here today to determine what type of individual you're looking for and to define that, and we greatly appreciate you helping us do that. We are going to be looking for that person because you drive what we are seeking. That is a decision that's driven by you instead of us. So wanted to definitely clarify that.
I just want to clarify that this is public comment, so I want to be very careful. Anyone has the opportunity to speak, but it cannot be a dialogue between two individuals or follow-up to individual comments. Is there any other public comment? Mary, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Mary Krogan, Vice President for Research and Economic Development. I don't usually need a mic, so apologies. I've personally served on over 30 searches for presidents and chancellors, and I would like to personally request that, and along the lines of what Regent J.T. Moran was speaking to, in terms of the pool, my own experience has been that recruiting presidents and chancellors from the academy works extremely well and would provide the type of stability, expertise, background, and particularly experience with shared governance that we desperately need here at UNLV for stabilization and moving forward. And in contrast, recruiting from industry and government tends to take you back 10 years. Janet Napolitano has been a great president for the University of California. She's just announced that she's stepping down, but we, as UC people, spent the first 4 years of her six-year presidency needing to teach her the academy. She's been very effective the last 2 years. UNLV cannot afford to spend more than 2 months having somebody learn about UNLV and she and higher education. So I'd like to put that out there, that I obviously feel strongly somebody recruited from the academy is critical in moving forward. Secondarily, as Vice President of Research, I'd be extremely remiss if I did not echo the points that have been made that we've already achieved R1. The goal going forward is to maintain it. R1 is the highest research intensity of all universities in the United States, as determined by Carnegie. So we've achieved the number one goal we had out of top tier. We've made considerable progress on all others. We have a lot of work still left to do, but all of it is achievable easily by 2025. And I think if it wasn't clear to you in reading the brochure, then that says an aspect of the brochure that clearly needs to be enhanced as to what achievements we've already made. Thank you all for your service. Having sat where you are, I know how much work you have ahead of you, and thank you for doing this.
Thank you very much. Is there any other public comment in the room at this time? Speak now or forever hold your peace until the next agendized meeting. Thank you. I want to start where we began by thanking the advisory board for the work that you've done by being here today and the work that we will do together moving forward. If you have questions or concern as the process moves forward, please feel free to contact in the office either Chief of Staff Gould, Winter Lipson from our office, who is the staff member assigned to this committee, And feel free to contact myself or the chancellor at any time, and we will look forward to engaging with you collectively as we work forward with the process. I ask you to take your binders with you and to stay tuned for the next update, which will be, come from the consulting firm. Thank you, and this meeting is adjourned.